Do you think rudeness is a serious national problem? Apparently, a poll discovered that 80% of us do consider rudeness a serious national problem, but nearly 100% of us say we personally are not rude. Do you buy that? Or are you willing to fess up that maybe you too do things that other people consider rude? And what are you willing to do about it? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 6 on this Thursday, November the 13th. We will talk with a civility expert this hour who was interviewed for a piece in Oprah magazine this month that we found on the CNN website this week. And we thought you would be interested in talking with him and maybe taking the rudeness quiz to see if you too do things that others perceive as rude. Our guest is PM Forney. He is a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University. He is the founder of the Civility Institute, or initiative, at Johns Hopkins, and he is the author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's great to be with you.
Yes, thanks for being with us. I'll have to be on my best behavior this hour.
You know, I'm sure you cannot do otherwise.
Oh, well, listeners would disagree with that. but we'll get into that later. But I took the Oprah quiz, as did a number of my producers yesterday. And as we suspected, we're not perfect. No one's really perfect, are they, when it comes to being polite?
No one is really perfect, and that is because the situations of life, the circumstances of life, stress, anonymity, the pursuit of our professional goals, the lack of time, etc. There are so many of these factors in our lives that conspire in not making us behave at our best.
Yeah, so did the Oprah people use you to develop this quiz, or did they come up with this themselves?
I did some work, some preparatory work for them in advance of the show.
Yeah, the like, are you chronically late? That was the first question on the quiz. And I have to admit, I'm not chronically late. From time to time, I'll be late, but I'm not chronically late. That's a symptom of rudeness.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm. I think that if you are chronically late, you can be defined as not very considerate towards others. If by instead, once in a while, you happen to be late, and maybe you call in advance and say, I'm going to be 10 minutes late, I'm sorry, you are not rude, you're being considerate. And so we have to make a difference between the two instances.
Yeah. And one of my pet peeves when it comes to lateness is maybe a silly one, but it just happened this last weekend in a movie theater. People who come to a movie and they're late and they have to make me get up, and they, you know, block the screen as they walk to their seats, and that's just rude, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed rude, because it shows a disregard for others. And the other side of the coin of that, or the complementary behavior of that, is people who leave early.
Mm-hmm.
And disturb the rest of the audience that would like to, perhaps to at the movie to see the final titles on the screen, or who, if they go to the opera, don't stay for the curtain calls and they start leaving to get ahead in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are. One of the fascinating things about rude behavior is the enormous range from the ridiculous to the sublime, so to speak, in acts of rudeness. You are rude, for instance, if you take a slice of pizza belonging to someone else in the office refrigerator, take a bite and put the rest of the slice back.
Yes, I'd say that's rude.
that's rude, but it is not nearly as rude as if you are a leader, a manager in a company, to upbraid harshly an inferior in the presence of others. That is rude too, but it is much ruder, and we think that it shouldn't be done. So the range of acts of rudeness is amazing. And one of the things that make rudeness not a trivial issue is that very often an act of rudeness, a slight, an act of disrespect, spirals into violence. There are about 1.8 million acts of physical violence in the American workplace in any given year, from a worker shoving a coworker to a worker shooting a coworker. How do we know that? Because they are reported.
Right. And that we also hear of all the reports of road rage, which is also a result, I would think, of, you know, that starts with maybe somebody just being rude and cutting someone off, and then it turns into something awful.
And it's an escalation. And the case of the road rage is very interesting because in road rage, you have the two factors, stress and anonymity, working together to bring about that awful result. You are stressed because you're late for work, driving in traffic, and you're in an anonymous environment because the driver in the other car is not really a human being. It's an anonymous face, a blank face, in an anonymous cogwheel of the machine he or she is driving. And so the combination of stress and anonymity and the fact that you are protected in the steel cocoon of your car that makes you think that you can really literally get away with anything, it's very dangerous given the frame of mind of people and how our brain works in that kind of situation.
We are talking about the problem of rudeness and the effects of rudeness in America. And after we check the weather, we'll talk some about how we can all be a little nicer. We are talking with PM Forney, who is a professor at Johns Hopkins, and he is also the founder of the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins and the author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. What do you suggest? 1-800-642-1234. Do you have a pet peeve when it comes to rudeness? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Won't you be kind and considerate in everything you do? Every little kindness finds its way right back to you.
We are talking about how we can be more kind and considerate with our guest, who is an expert on civility and an advocate for more civility. We are talking with PM Forney, a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University. He is the founder of the Civility Initiative there and author of a couple of books on civility. His latest is The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. We'll wonder if you have any questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So before we go to the phones and calls are coming in, Professor Forney, why did this become such an issue for you? Why did you actually found an Institute for Civility and write books on the Civility Solution?
Because at a certain point of my life, about 10 years ago, it became clearer and clearer to me that when we talk about incivility and rudeness, we are not talking about trivial matters. We are talking about quality of life, and we should be very careful about not dismissing these micro cruelties, these micro indignities that we undergo every day of our lives, because especially at the end of the day, they pile up, they add to stress. What rudeness does, it erodes self-esteem in the person at the receiving end of it. It adds to stress. It can bruise and break relationships. It poisons life in the workplace with gossip, for instance, and it can escalate into violence. So whenever we are trying to assess why we should be considerate and kind, we should first of all consider these very serious things, the causes and results of incivility. On the other hand, civility is not trivial because civility makes us likable, it reduces stress, it strengthens social bonds, it is good for business, And essentially, civility does the everyday busy work of goodness. And there is a connection between civility and ethics. When we practice civility in everyday life, when we give our seat on a bus to a pregnant woman or an elderly gentleman with a cane, we are not just polite, we are being ethical agents. In a small but significant way, we have transcended our own immediate needs and desires to tend to the needs and desires of other people. So when we talk about civility, manners, and politeness, we are not really talking about which fork to choose for the salad. We are talking about how to treat one another in everyday life and what's more important than that.
Not much. Let's go to the phones. Ruth in Brule. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. You were talking about pet peeves, and one thing that drives me nuts is in any public area, when someone bumps into you or brushes against you and has no acknowledgement or even a nod or apology or excuse me, nothing, and or you're walking right behind someone and they know you're behind them and they see you, but they don't even make any attempt to keep the door from slamming on you. Things like that.
I know what you mean.
Call.
What do we do, Professor Forney, when something like that happens?
That is a lack of awareness. We are self-absorbed in many circumstances in life. So one thing that we should do, and I pointed this out in my first book, Choosing Civility, the 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct, civility and good manners are first and foremost about being aware of others. We are civil when we are aware of others, and we weave restraint, respect, and consideration into the very fabric of that awareness. The people that Ruth is mentioning are not aware. They disregard others. And so the first rule is to pay attention. You cannot love someone else without paying attention. You cannot be civil to a stranger without paying attention. And the first two rules in my first book are to pay attention and to be aware of others.
Yeah. So I'm also though wondering if when that person wants me to get out of my seat at the movie theater when they come in late, or when somebody bumps into you and doesn't say excuse me, do we as the recipient of that rudeness do anything?
You have to choose if you want to fight that particular battle. And I would say the general rule is fight it, especially with spouses, family, and friends. Because if you do not, they will repeat the offensive behavior, and you will repress again, and you will say nothing. And they'll do it again, and again, and again. And someday you're going to explode. And then they will say, well, but you never told me that you felt this way. How was I supposed to know? And now you're doubly at fault because you didn't say anything and because you exploded. So being assertive is not being uncivil. Actually, assertiveness is one of the 25 rules of considerate conduct. And so you have to show others how far they can push the envelope with you. We teach others how to treat us by how much we are willing to endure from them. And it's better to speak up.
Yeah, speaking up, though, to a stranger who's rude,
yes,
who might be dangerous, I suppose.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm. That's why I made the distinction. Mm-hmm. Do it with someone whom you know, and be careful with a stranger because you do not know literally whom do you have in front of you.
But Ruth, thanks for that call, because I think if people hear about these types of pet peeves, they might see it in themselves and maybe be a little bit more aware down the road, maybe. Amy in Madison sends this email. Here are my rudeness pet peeves. When you are out with a friend who runs into people that the friend knows, but they never introduce you to that person or to those people. Oh, yeah, that makes you uncomfortable, doesn't it?
Yes, that's a very good example of disregard. A similar situation of disregard is when a newcomer comes to the conversation and nobody brings him or her up to speed. It is very considerate to say, John, we are talking about the most recent developments in the human resources office. So John knows what the conversation is about, and you show that he exists, and the fact that he exists is important to you, important enough to to updating him or, on what is going to be what is being discussed.
Yeah, and sometimes when that happens, because it has happened to me as the person running into someone I know, the only reason I don't introduce sometimes is because I've forgotten the person's name, and I don't, you know, it's just a real casual acquaintance, not even someone I know very well. I suppose at that time I should say, "I'm sorry, I forgot your name," but I feel like that's going to make them feel bad too.
Well, but I think that you will feel bad, worse mm-hmm. than the other person, I think. And it's probably better to if you don't say anything, you compound one flaw with the other, I think. And I think it's better to say, "I'm really sorry. Could you remind me of your name?" And leave it at that.
Yeah, I have a code with my husband. He'll say if I don't immediately introduce him to someone he doesn't know, he will say, "Hello, I'm Joy's husband," and introduce himself, and the person will say their name. That's one least solution that we've come up with.
Yes, indeed. That's a very good one.
Peter in Bayfield is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I work at a coffee shop, and I feel like I experience a wide array of rude behavior on a daily basis, and I guess two things that bother me. One is there are customers that will sometimes whistle while waiting in line, and I feel it's kind of a sign of impatience. But even more so than that, there's like a particular customer that will come in and demand preferential treatment at times when they're way at the back of the line and I'm waiting on other customers. And then, you know, by the time they get to the front, they'll make some offhanded comment to me, you know, about how I didn't do this or that for them. And it's awfully frustrating, and I find it to be very disrespectful.
Yeah, and I bet you people are in the service industry witness all sorts of rude behavior, Professor Forney.
Yes, of course. Customer service is really the front line of rudeness. And it goes a little bit both ways, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. There are customers, and there are millions of customers that are occasionally dismissive of their service providers. But there are also service providers that sometimes, for whatever the reason, they are stressed, they are fatigued, they feel they are underpaid, are not really behaving in the most sterling of professional ways. And so it is one of the fault lines. It is one of the trenches of the everyday battle in social interaction. And again, a little bit of more of awareness, trying to see the person beyond the role that he or she is playing. She or he is not just a service provider, anonymous, that you are not going to see again and yet that you can abuse or disregard. It is she is a mother with a son with a cold at home, and he is a father of two who are in school and not doing very well. So rediscover the real human being placed under the veneer of the service that he or she provides.
I'm going to jump in now because we have news from National Public Radio coming up, and then we'll continue talking about rudeness after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 6:36 on this Thursday, November the 13th. Good to have you with us. We are talking with a guest about rudeness and the problem of rudeness in America and what we can do about it. And we're welcoming your questions, maybe your rudeness pet peeves, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, talk@wpr.org. Here are a few questions for you to mull over. We got these from the Oprah.com website, a piece there on rudeness that featured our guest. Have you ever gone through a supermarket 10-item express lane with more than 10 items? Have you ever texted or talked on a cell phone while in a movie theater? Have you ever let your dog relieve himself on your neighbor's lawn? Have you ever not RSVP'd to an event by the date requested? Fess up. Maybe you've done some of these. These are common examples of rude behavior, but not trivial. Our guest says this isn't a trivial issue. PM Forney is a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University, the founder of the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins, and the author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. Our next caller is Kalia in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I teach women's self-defense, and in every single class I've ever taught, I deal with the fact that women say, you know, I just don't know how to speak out. I don't know how to tell someone when they've offended me, especially in public. And I'm trying to reconcile the idea of civility with some of the real problems with social norms and what is considered appropriate behavior.
That's an interesting question, Professor Forney.
I would like for Kalia to explain exactly. I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, well, one example, I tell this example in my classes because I think it's pretty funny and illustrative, but one Halloween I was walking around and I had my butt touched, which many women have had, and many, maybe men also, and I said, because I'd been teaching these classes, I thought to myself, God, that felt awful. And I thought, you know what? Instead of feeling shamed and not being able to say anything, I'm gonna do what we call naming the behavior. So I said, you just touched my butt, and that made me feel very uncomfortable. And I can't tell you how many women have said, oh my God, that's a great idea. And I've had all of these students and all these friends say, you know, I was on the bus. And someone, you know, bumped into me and did this thing that made me feel so uncomfortable. And all I said was, you know, that just made me feel uncomfortable. And it's like a breakthrough for a lot of people to think, oh, I can tell someone that is a stranger that what they've done has put me in a position of feeling uncomfortable. And I think we often think of those things as rude. We think that we can't say those things in public. And I just, having seen so many women say, oh, my gosh, I can do that, makes me feel like, oh, something's going on here where the norms of civility aren't always, maybe it's not civility, but some of the norms of the way that we're supposed to act and behave in public don't always protect everyone, all the players.
But indeed, you were not uncivil at all. What you call name the behavior is a part of what I advocate in my book, the SIR, SIR, acronym SIR, way of responding to an act of rudeness. S is state, you state what happened, and it's you name the behavior exactly the way you mentioned it. I, you inform. You inform the other person of what the behavior did to me, and you said it made me feel uncomfortable. And then the R is for request. You requested that the behavior be not repeated if that person is a person that is going to be around you. So state, inform, and request is the best way of responding when you are at the receiving end of an act of rudeness. So without having read my book, you were doing exactly what I advocate.
Maybe we could teach a class together sometime.
Maybe.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Kalia. Yeah, that's again, I think that's a wonderful solution, too. But I get a little bit nervous because if somebody's rude enough to grab your butt and you call them on it, there still might be a consequence.
Well, it's a judgment call.
Yeah.
It's a judgment call. But you can have it can be done by an acquaintance. It can
be done
mm-hmm. by a family friend and so on and so forth. And it can be done by a spouse. It doesn't have to be touching in an improper way, but you can say, you state, well, yesterday you came to pick me up at work half an hour late and you didn't call me. that's the behavior. Mm-hmm. And then you inform and say, when you do that, you show me, I feel that you don't value my time very much. And then you request, I trust that from next week on, you will be on time, and if you are not, you will call me. So the SIR, the SIR way of proceeding, is really the best, because you state the facts and you tell the other person what the facts did to you, and then you request a change.
Excellent. Next we go to Doug in Kenosha. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm a high school teacher, and in speaking with a lot of the other teachers and in just noting some of the kids' attitudes towards things, they seem to have a very apathetic outlook on life. You know, nothing matters besides what matters to them. Is this something that we're harboring in teaching, or is this something that's just a result of what they've already seen, and therefore it's just exacerbating the problem?
An attitude that nothing matters but them?
Just this real apathy towards everything that students seem to have, like the younger generation seems to have. My I have a son, he's in seventh grade, who's very rude, and he doesn't care about anything.
Yes, this is a problem, mm-hmm. and part of the problem is the way the last two generation of children have been raised. We have been very good at instilling self-esteem in our children, perhaps even too good. But self-esteem, of course, is a good thing. But when we feed our children oversized portions of self-esteem, we create children who think that the world revolves around them, who are self-absorbed. And they are apathetic when it comes to the needs and desires and the well-being of others. They are trapped in a cage of narcissism that we have built for them. And so we have been very good at instilling self-esteem, but not so good at instilling restraint, self-restraint. And self-restraint is not a bad word. It's something that we all need. We cannot have a civil society without restraint. And so part of this philosophy of education of the last two generations has made for many youngsters being a little bit narcissistic and alienated from the world of the adults and unable or unwilling to be considerate and kind to others.
What I tend to say, is there things that can be done about this, or is this going to just be a problem that continues for a long time?
I think we have to rebalance the self-esteem, self-restraint teaching in our children. And we have to praise them and reward them for real achievements, not for trivial achievements, so that they have to struggle to gain important things in life. They have to work towards things, and it's the only way that they learn that things are valuable, and you have to work for them. And so the only way to have them snap out of their apathetic status.
We are talking with P.M. Forney. He is the author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. He is also a professor at Johns Hopkins University and the founder of the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins. We welcome your questions for him about how to be more civil, how to react to rudeness, the extent of the problem of rudeness, and if you have any pet peeves. Rudeness pet peeves that you'd like to get off your chest. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, November the 13th. Coming up after 7, we'll talk with a guest who says that President-elect Obama should choose some Republicans to fill some of the key cabinet positions. We'll find out why and wonder what you think about that idea coming up after 7 o'clock. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, I'm not going to be here. Jean Purcell will be filling in for me during the 6 o'clock hour and the 7 o'clock hour because I'll be on assignment, so to speak. I'll be, for Madison area listeners, you can tune into Channel 3, WISC-TV. Tomorrow between 6 and 7, and I'll be co-hosting the morning show. I'm the guest host tomorrow morning on WISC-TV Channel 3 in Madison. I'm going to be co-hosting that program with my husband. Rob Starbuck. So I hope that if you're in the Madison area, you can click on there just for a couple of minutes, and then you can tune back to Wisconsin Public Radio. I'll be back for the Week in Review program after 8 tomorrow. We're talking about rudeness during this hour with our guest, a professor at Johns Hopkins University who is an expert on civility and an advocate for more civility. John in Madison is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I found some ways to self-condition myself so I wouldn't be so irritable, whether it's suppressing my response to other people or seeing their actions in a way that doesn't make them so irritable. One you've already referred to, in situations automatically you try to see the situation from the other person's point of view. Secondly, realizing that when I'm in mental or physical pain, I will over-respond or respond inappropriately. And so really look out for myself in those situations. The third way I found, the reason I'm not going to go into why I did this, but for a 3-year period, I avoided expressing my negative feelings about other people to other people. I was still thinking them, but I was not saying them to anyone. I'm not going to go into why, but anyway, I didn't do it. And it had a profound effect on me insofar as developing a positive attitude towards other people. And last, I noticed that when I stopped television for 6 months, I developed a completely different attitude towards my fellow human beings, not anywhere near so irritable, much more positive, whether it was I didn't see the way people respond to provocation or violent acts or playing violent video games. I don't know what it was, but it was a profound effect.
Interesting, John. I guess you won't be watching Channel 3 tomorrow morning.
What's that?
Never mind. I just mentioned that I'll be doing a little guest host stint on Channel 3 in Madison. But talk a little bit, Professor Forney, about the media and how that influences rudeness in America, and John's experience not watching TV felt a whole lot better.
When polls are taken, surveys of opinion in America about what Americans perceive to be the causes of incivility, a good amount of the respondents will say the media is responsible, television, the movies, the harsh language, the violence, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Now, television is both it influences society and is in itself a result of what society is. So we should be careful to give the media too much responsibility for all of the evils of society. The media are a container in which you put what society is, essentially. But certainly it often presents a view of things and it uses a language that is not the best in terms of civil concerns. So, but something very interesting, I think, that John said is that he has found ways to restrain his reactions to rudeness, to the bad behaviors of others. I would like to suggest a couple of other such behaviors. One, when you're at the receiving end of an act of rudeness, you can think of it, you visualize it as a package that is being given to you, and you accept, but then you return because it doesn't belong to you. Because why doesn't it belong to you? Because it is about a bad state of mind of the person who was rude. And so it is about him or her and not about you. So you return the package, and in a way you are rid of it and you don't have to respond in harsher ways. Also, when you are at the receiving end of an act of rudeness, you can think that you're being videotaped. And the videotape will be used to train others in the situation in which you are finding yourselves. For instance, if you are at work and you have an angry customer who is really irritating you and your patience is wearing thin, you can think, well, okay, my company is videotaping this so that they can train new workers in how to deal with difficult customers. And that allows you to step back a little bit from the situation and just look for the camera, and that very often works.
Yeah. John also mentioned that he did, at least for a period of time, purposely not share any negative feelings he had about someone with other people, and I believe he said that helped him and gave him a more positive attitude.
Yes, the problem is that it worked for him, but sometimes to suppress too much your feelings can have a poisonous effect, can have a toxic effect.
Yeah.
So we all have to choose what works for us. But the alternative is to express your feelings, but not immediately. Not in the heat of the moment, because we have to remember that part of wisdom is to be happy with the way we choose to behavior, not now, but an hour from now,
mm-hmm.
tomorrow, a month from now. Because reacting in a harsh way gives us an immediate release, and we are tempted to do that. But being unkind, if we are unkind, if we are harsh, if we utter words that are simply not acceptable, makes us unhappy with ourselves later.
Yeah.
So stop, take the proverbial big breath, count to 10, and only then, and think about it, stop and think, and then react. And if you want to engage in this battle, if you want to bring this act to the attention of the person who perpetrated it, do it with these provisos.
Yes. Thank you, John. Thon in Racine. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I listened to the teacher in Kenosha about the rootnet of his children. I work at a school district in Racine,
mm-hmm.
and middle school, and we have a special ed in our room. But, you know, I love to be with kids because when they show their rootness, I correct them mildly. Like, anytime, I would like to have all the teachers listen to this show. Anytime the kid, you do something for them, they don't say thank you, you expect what you say and expect the respondent, thank you. And if they want to ask something for us in this room, they have to say this line. If they don't say that, I won't give to them. May I borrow a pencil, please? May I borrow? May I go to the bathroom? May I? So that way, I know that I instill in them, where we teach 7 and 8 graders. The 8th grader will be gone, but the 7th will be with us from 1 year to another year. So in 2 years, I hope my teacher and I will instill in the kid that politeness is what we expect. And they respect us in here. There's no put-down words. Like, for example, shut up. We don't expect that. They don't hear from any of us, and I don't like to hear from their mouth. And the S word, nothing in our classroom, special ed. Anybody want to observe our classroom, be welcome. We have 7 or 8 kids in here. They're well-behaved. I'm so proud of that. And I hope people would hear this and do that to a kid younger age, you know?
Right. Teachers should have expectations and not allow rude behavior in the classroom, Professor?
Absolutely. Pong? I think that the caller is doing exactly the right thing because it habituates children to do certain behaviors, and in the long run, they will become second nature. First, they will do it because they're being told to do that, and they don't really know exactly why that is, but in the long run, they will understand the reasons for that, and it becomes second nature. It is a very wise way of going about it. When mother tells little Timmy, you should eat with your mouth closed, chew with your mouth closed, he doesn't know why. He needs to be told again and again and do it. And one day he will understand, oh, my actions have consequences for others, and that's why I should chew with my mouth closed. And so mother, by teaching him to chew with his mouth closed, does not just teach him a rule of table manners. She teaches him the notion that his actions have consequences for others, which is the basis of ethical behavior. And that's why good manners are the training wheels of altruism. They are about teaching ethics in a way that children can understand.
Linda in Wilton is with us now. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. Wonderful show. You pretty much answered my question. I live in a small town, and I'll say good morning to anyone on the street, and 90% of the time, I get absolutely no response at all, and they're looking right in my eyes. It's not like they didn't hear me. So I think I just decided on listening to this show to just say, well, have a good day. So, and keep going. I don't know if that's the correct way to respond, but I can't change the way people behave.
I don't see anything wrong in that.
Extremely rude.
Yeah.
I think that you are animated by good intentions. You are being cordial. You are breaking you're shattering the screen of anonymity. You are being congenial. You show that you notice the existence of people in your community. And so you cannot be faulted by that.
Yeah.
For that.
Well, I'm wondering if we only have about a minute or so to go. Any final words of wisdom for civility, Professor Forney?
Well, why civility and good manners are not trivial. We are creatures of the social ocean. Life is a relational experience. Life is about relating and connecting. And when we are civil and kind, we connect and relate at our best. Social skills strengthen social bonds, and we need social bonds to survive and to thrive. Yeah. And that's really the essential message. Social skills strengthen social bonds, and we need social bonds to survive and to thrive in life.
Thank you so much for being with us.
And good manners and civility are time-proven, age-proven codes of social bonds.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
PM Forney is a professor at Johns Hopkins, and he is the author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.